Good morning. I'm your host, Claudia Shambaugh, welcoming you to the July 23rd, 2024 edition of Ask a Leader. New cycles come and new cycles go. The recent cycles mimic a hurricane season, one storm after the next, building, peaking, and subsiding. Ask a Leader will turn the mic over this morning to four women to process how the latest unprecedented news is landing for them 105 days before the November 5th general election. For the full hour will be Polly Mary, Yolanda Robinson, Jane Wishon, and Olivia Fu to reflect on this moment that we are in. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show, everybody. My four guests are an embarrassment of riches covering the moment. Yes, the moment we are in. We had to do this live with heavy-duty news constantly breaking. A brief introduction to each of them, not to do any disrespect, because there's a heady lot of experience behind them all. Polly Mary's a retired higher education administrator, appeared earlier about her memoir, Growing Up in the Ville in St. Louis, Missouri. Yolanda Robinson is also a retired professional and a friend and colleague of Polly's and a veteran of election politics in Orange County. Jane Wishon, a builder of many LA area Democratic organizations, is currently co-chair of Organizational Development and Chartering Committee at the Los Angeles County Democratic Party, and she's co-chair of the California Democratic Credentials Committee. And Olivia Fu is a former co-editor of The Express at San Juan Hills High School, previously appeared on the show about her voters registration activism, especially around the March for Our Lives policies in Southern California, in Southern OC. And she graduated from Stanford. She's now a Tom Ford Philanthropy Fellow at North Star Fund. They all come to us live because that's the only way you could do this, folks. It's so much news. Olivia Fu joins me in studio. Polly Mary in Garden Grove. Yolanda Robinson, although an Orange County resident, she's in D.C. right now, and I'm guessing what she's doing in D.C. And Jane Wishon's in Los Angeles. Welcome to Ask a Leader, Olivia, Polly, Yolanda, and Jane.
Thank you for having us.
Well,
we're glad to be here.
That was Polly, and this is Olivia's voice speaking in.
Yes, thank you so much for having us.
And Jane, a little sound.
Yes, hi, thank you for having us. I guess we're all repeating that.
That's thanking you. And then Yolanda's voice.
Thrilled to be here with my sisters.
Okay, with your sisters. I wasn't sure if you were with like a DNC kind of a brain trust sort of thing, but we'll get into that. So first, I want for each one of you to bring what you like about your involvement in politics and have you go back to Sunday at about 11 o'clock in the morning Pacific time. It turns out that I just learned before I got to the station that turns out that Dark Brandon pulled off an amazing leak-free sort of coup. He had planned this announcement for that for Sunday morning, that he wanted to get, he put this up after the Republican National Convention and after the interview cycles on the radio. So at first I was thinking this is like a Russian doll kind of embedded within, but it's much, much more elaborate, I think. We didn't have that kind of insight going into Sunday morning when the news was starting to break. So I don't know who wants to start, but somebody get ready. Tell us what you thought when the word came out that Joe Biden had withdrawn his bid for a second term as president and that Vice President Kamala Harris was officially running for the presidency. Who wants to start?
I will. Hi, this is Jane. I think I had all the feelings. I had grief because Biden has been an amazing president, and his first announcement didn't specify he was supporting Kamala. Fortunately, he followed it up immediately. But grief and happiness and sadness and anger and all kinds of things. And then when we saw that Kamala was ready to step into that, into those big high heels, then I was thrilled. And to see the outpouring, the energy of support for her is, I mean, I have chills because I've never seen anything like it. I'm just amazed and agog, and I'm so excited to get her elected.
Yolanda, you're a seasoned electoral activist. You're processing Sunday morning. Or no, you were, it was, if you're still, you were DC with your sisters, then you, it was your afternoon.
Well, I'm still here, and I return to Orange County next week. When I heard, which was 2 p.m. here, I was thrilled because for the first time, I believed it was going to happen, I said, geez, the Democrats played the long game. Because there are no accidents, and that he announced it that day, I had believed and kind of heard that this would be coming down the pike and didn't share with anybody because I didn't think anybody would believe me if I said it. But it did. After, as you already said, after the convention, after Vance is in place and he comes in, and I could just see the different segments of the Democratic National Committee and making it happen. And so it was just pure joy. And so people were texting me like, you knew, didn't you? And I was like, no, I didn't know, but I had suspected it. So I am thrilled. It just reminded me of keep hope alive. And so that's what we're seeing, because it's brought segments back of our all communities to say, this is the kind of life we want to live in this country. So I'm thrilled.
I'll jump in. This is Polly here. Well, you know, interestingly enough, the first thing I thought about was my parents. And I thought they would not have believed it. My parents were, they were old when I was born. And I remember my mother talking to me about voting for Kennedy. That was a while ago. So she said, you cannot vote for Nixon. You have to. My mother was a really astute woman. And so I just want to say that my mind kind of went to my parents thinking they would not have believed that this was possible, that a black woman would be the presidential candidate for the Democratic Party. They would not have gotten. So I think about the historical aspect, the long run of how things have changed and how wonderful that is.
We think of our forebears when there's some sort of seismic shifts under our feet too, right, Polly?
Yes, yes. Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And that's where my head went back to them, to all those people who couldn't vote, and Fannie Lou Hamer. You know, I thought about all these people who helped make, who worked so hard in the trenches to get us to this point. I think it was Fannie Lou Hamer who talked about when she first voted, was able to vote, and she said, and I voted for myself, because she was running for office someplace. And she said, I cast my first vote, and I voted for myself. I was just thrilled.
Thank you for that, Polly Mary. So, Olivia Fu, your impression. This is Olivia's holding the youngest demographics down in the call. Mm-hmm. Olivia?
I found out. I found out when my dad called me. I think I'd kind of been scrolling through Twitter all weekend, maybe waiting, hoping, but not really believe something like this could happen. And then I think right when I got that phone call, my reaction was to laugh. I just couldn't really process or believe what was happening. Like, this is only my second presidential election that I can vote in. And everything that has just been happening over the last few weeks has felt so, like, incredible that I couldn't even process fully what it was that was happening. And since I think Jane said at the beginning that he hadn't immediately backed Kamala, I was like, oh my gosh, like, are we going to go into an open convention? Like, what's going to happen? This is going to be chaos. So I feel like everything after that was just sort of processing and maybe feeling some more glimmers of hope.
Thank you for that. So, and for those of you who've just joined us for the full hour, we're going to have four phenomenal women talking about processing these unprecedented times. And you just heard from Olivia Fu, who is, these aren't normal elections, Olivia, that you're cutting your political teeth on. But it's not been normal. She was sort of an outlier in the political culture that is Southern Orange County. So there's all of that going on. So that's Olivia Fu, Polly Mary, Yolanda Robinson, and Jane Wishon. So I had a different metaphor too, besides the Russian doll that's sort of layered in a layer. There's a lot of metaphors here. So the phenomenal organizational efforts for that, as I didn't get the update this morning, but by last night, $100 million were raised. There were 44,000 black women leaders on a Zoom call, and people are going to get it wrong. It wasn't that they asked the Zoom CEO. The Zoom CEO was in the call, and then she said, oh, if you're bumping up your 1,000 limit, I'll make sure we've engineered it so that you can accommodate 44,000 women, which is, I guess, a record. So that there are so many facts to sort of check out that are, I heard it right through this morning, people getting it wrong. So there was that conference call. Then there's now a challenge for the white woman conference call. So there's all these phenomenal efforts. Those are the tailwinds. The headwinds, though, our knives are coming out. They're already coming out. I'm hearing from friends of mine that they think the worst. They're scared or they're angry, or there's all kinds of sordid images that come to me that come to their minds, and memes that they're working with. And so I want to. Oh, and they're also breaking this morning was that there are 90 Democratic donors that are backdooring demands to the Democratic National Committee before supporting Harris. They want assurances that her platform will support domestic and overseas American business, that she'll push policies to benefit the U.S. economy. Maybe, Jane, you want to tell us how much of that backdoor discussion you're watching, and you want to put it in perspective for us.
Well, I mean, I'm not a major donor, and I'm not privy to those kinds of conversations. I think that these are conversations that happen whenever you have a candidate. There are going to be people who want to advocate for their perspectives. I don't think that there's anything in what Biden has accomplished so far that those donors would have a problem with, and I can't imagine that, you know, Kamala Harris will change the course at this point. And I do think that there's been quite a bit of the media exaggerating or really, you know, playing with the, oh, big donors are doing this and big donors are making these demands. Well, big donors always ask for things, but I think that anyone who supports a Democratic candidate at this point understands that the alternative is just untenable. And so whether she has to get those $90 million or whatever, you know what, we'll find it somewhere else if they're going to make demands that she's not comfortable with. Because if we don't trust her at this point, if we don't have her back, then, you know, then we're in deep, deep trouble. So, you know, I think it's above our pay grade. I think we trust her. We certainly can give her our opinions about things, but at the end of the day, the job of president is so complex that I don't know how anybody really can wrap their arms around all the issues that a president has to deal with.
Thank you, Jane. Yolanda, some insights from your seasoned work.
Well, since I am here, as you say, in the DMV, George Soros, our son, Alex, and George have pledged billions to the campaign that came out here locally today. So, and that matches what Elon Musk has said he is committed to the other side. I will not use that name. So I think, as my colleague just previously stated, we will hear those kinds of things, but I would be surprised that it hasn't been addressed and managed. And what we see are reassurances to different parties that business is as usual. That's why she put her campaign headquarters is in Delaware as opposed to California or Chicago. And I think if we look at even where the national, the DNC convention is Chicago. That just happens to be where Obama is. So I would say many things have been there. And I just want to make one other comment.
Yes.
That, Polly made about the historical perspective. I grew up in Memphis, and I was a little girl the day that Martin Luther King was assassinated. And I had relatives and dear friends of my parents that were marching that day, like Reverend Samuel Cowles, we call him Billy, and Reverend Lawson, who recently passed, and Fred Gray, who was honored by President Biden in the White House. He was the attorney for Martin Luther King. And so I learned early on about the importance of voting and education and to live to this moment. As all of us said, I thought about, brought tears to my eyes because I thought about my mom and other people who literally ran home because everything shut down once he was shot. And to live at this moment, to see a person of color, a woman, to be able to address this. But I would say that as we all are, we are so committed to making this happen because it was Olivia who said it. It's untenable. There's no other way. And she's not out there alone. She has the blessing of the party. What is sad to hear today, here, some of the people saying, what an insult to President Biden. But I think that diminishes who he is. He had to have been involved in how this played out.
Well, that's what I'm thinking is, actually, now that we have this sort of massive data point, that it sort of shows that he played a power game that is actually huge for his legacy. So that, I think, it's we're just starting to digest that. I mean, because some of us are... There's different ways we've been experiencing this campaign. But I also want for everybody to talk about what the indicator means to you when that $100 million collected, that's a lot of small donors, which is the sign for seasoned electoral professionals that there are people that are buying in to, they're confirming how they're going to vote. And they are saying they are committed, they're engaged, and they're going to be active. So it's, in a way, little money speaks as powerfully as the big money. All four of you have been involved in grassroots, can talk to that.
I want to say something about what, DePauli here, I want to say something about what I heard yesterday, and that was Kamala actually has access to the money that has already been raised.
She is
part of the ticket.
Correct.
So whatever money exists in whatever funds exist, she already has a right to it. I guess is the word. She already has a right to it. So she's not starting out. I think what's important about the money being raised is that the money is being raised because of her. But she's not starting out with an empty chest at all.
Right, and that's for people who understood the game here, the game I say advisedly, is that there's election laws and there's party regulations, and it was very clear that there was only one candidate if Biden pulled out of the race. There's only one that could use that. It was like around $400 million. I'm grasping out because there's a couple of different funds that are on this campaign. So it sort of eliminated the competition. So it was unsettling. Somebody thought there could be some sort of candidate pulled out of the hat. But right, Polly. It's her money that she can use because of the way the Biden-Harris campaign funds were set up. It's all hers.
Right. Yes. Yes.
Yolanda?
Yes.
Did you want to talk to the meaning, and from all of your electoral activism, how the meaning of so many small donors giving the sign?
I see it as a reaffirmation and an affirmation of going forward and who she is and who the party Democrats are. That's what we've been saying here, because the money that came in addition, as Polly said, to the $90 million and another that was already in the war chest, and actually it was almost $200 million in the Biden-Harris war chest, and then to raise another $100 million, and then add to that the electoral votes that came in. And I just will highlight for all of us that we know, I'm so proud of the CBC, the Hispanic Coalition, because all those caucuses held out until they had absolute assurance that she would be the candidate. And if we remember, we saw that on TV. And when it did, they all collapsed, and that's what we see. They were looking for feedback from the public, and the public showed, this is what we want. We're energized now, and that's why that $100 million came in less than, what, 24, 36 hours?
Exactly. Right.
And that's what they were looking for. And I also think, too, as I said, I see it as I agree with you, it's not a game, but the strategy of the Democratic Party was encouraging. Because remember, last thing I will say, let us not forget, Joe Manchin and some of the independents, remember, he wanted to come back and register as a Democrat because he wanted to go to a conference in Hakeem Jeffries yesterday, and they published his comment, we are not accepting applications for new members, because he wanted access to the delegate floor coming up in Chicago.
I'm just amazed watching all these phenomenal power plays. It is really incredible, and we know who's taught Hakeem Jeffries what he knows. The one who was holding a lot of high cards that nobody realized how many she's holding, that Nancy Pelosi. Jane, your observations of this unrolling.
I think what I've also heard is that there are pledges that bring the total raised in the last 48 hours to $300 million. Of the $100 million that was raised through Act Blue and all that, 60% of those donations are first-time donors to political parties. 60%.
Wow.
That is huge. And I saw the numbers. I don't remember now, but there's a huge number of people who went to the monthly donation right away. So this, all of that is just unprecedented. I know we're going to use that word a lot, but
it fits. I mean, there's no other word. And for Olivia, who is new to all of this, I mean, in the scheme of things, comparatively speaking, yes.
Yeah, I think I was going to bring up the same point that Jane did, how notable it was that over 500,000 of those donations came from new donors. And I feel like I can say for myself and how I read it and from people who are my age, is that was more of a signal of a hope for something different. I think that in this moment, people are feeling that there maybe could be a change. I think that there was a lot of dissatisfaction with the way things have been going with Biden's candidacy and even administration in the last few months, years. So I think that seeing all these new people come in, to me, is signaling that people are wanting something different from this moment and see that potentially happening with Vice President Harris.
Anybody else want to add to that? Because in a way, it's the feedback loop. Power at the top and power coming from the grassroots. We're in. We're sending our bit of money. And we know one contribution leads to, there will be future contributions. So it's not going to top off. More greater percentage and more of those individuals contributing again. Isn't that how that works, Jane?
Absolutely. Once somebody buys in, then they're committed. I mean, that's a huge sign of commitment to make that first donation. And also that leads to volunteerism, which is a large part of what I do here in West LA. We do phone banks and all those kinds of things, and we need volunteers. And the energy generated by all this, but also by these first-time donors, now they're going to be looking for a way to make sure that their money, their donation, accomplishes what they wanted for it. So it's awesome.
Thank you for that. Well, so how We all have our friends. I mean, there was one that just thought she was going to have at it and give me her darkest takes. And so I'm a big enough girl, I can sort of deal with perspectives that are different than mine. And but so I don't, so this is everybody's chance to provide a manual to listeners to deal with the knives that are coming out. There's memes, there's histories that have been dealt with, but their histories come back again because we're watching a total disarray in the GOP and the GOP media platform. So how do all four of you deal with the doom and gloom consumers of media and memes that are trying to sort of undermine how we just plow ahead and stay constructive and focused on this electoral process?
Well, hi, this is Jane again. I talk a lot. I'm sorry. I think that and we have to turn our anxiety and our worries into action. And whether it's posting, you know, following the Kamala Harris social media handles and amplifying those messages, whether it's making phone calls or, you know, text banks or whatever. But I just can't. I just can't let those doomsayers do anything or take me down, because all of my energy needs to go towards making sure that Kamala Harris is elected. And I'll say to people, if somebody says, "Oh, well, my son-in-law said, I guarantee Trump's going to win," and I said, "I guarantee you he's not, and I'm going to make sure that happens, because I just can't."
We're all hearing that. So that Jane, and maybe Jane can elaborate on that, but all three of the rest of you have talked about how you deal with people that are very of a different mind about the trends people that aren't interested still. There still are people who think, why bother? So this is your manual. Keep filling it out for people going forward into this. We have 15 weeks.
Well, I had a pool party at my house.
This is Polly.
Sunday, and Polly speaking. And my oldest grandson, the first word out of his mouth to me was, "She's not going to win." Well, I almost put his head under the water, so you know, put my foot on his head. But then my youngest granddaughter came over, and I realized that I had an opportunity with her to talk about the exceptionality of this moment, and that she has to get out there and vote. So I kind of took it upon myself to just start at home and work with people that I know, and young kids, young people, and make sure that everybody that I talk to, this is a phenomenal position that we're in. And last night, in preparation for this call, I looked up how many women internationally are heads of state. And there are hundreds of them from all lots and lots of nations. And we are the only one. We are the only nation that hasn't had a female head of state. And so here is another historic moment that finally we can break that glass ceiling, as Hillary tried to do. And so it's another reason for us to really get out there. The fact that Kamala is Black is a point. The fact that she's a woman is a point. We just really have to bust our balls. Is that the right thing to say?
You can say that. FCC allows that, but that's all you can say.
Right. To get her. So I'm really energized by the possibility. I wasn't initially because of the historical aspect of where we are, but I'm really more and more motivated but I'm just waiting to hear what the Trump camp is going to come out. Also, Kamala is, what, 20 years his junior? And so now he is the old man, and so he is going to have to work really hard to make that aspect disappear, which he won't. And then he's going to use Vance in Pennsylvania. They say that they're just going to sit him because that is a key state. So we have to help the Democratic Party do what they need to do. And I am personally open to doing whatever it is I have to do, period. I'll stop there for a moment.
This is Yolanda. I view it in kind of two ways. As I said earlier on, when I had heard that Kamala would be and that Biden would be stepping down, I remember a couple of close friends, I mentioned the possibility. They're just like, oh, it's not going to happen. And I was disappointed, not because they took my word, that's not it, is that the vision wasn't there for them. And then I referred them back, and myself too. I remember when Barack Obama ran for president, I can't tell you how many friends go, he'll never win. And so I've been referring people back. It's hard work. We can get it done. And even now, in terms of a woman's movement, look who we are. Are we going to allow people in this country to continue to define us as less than? And so I've been very hopeful. What was interesting to me when I talked to young people, they're like, we can get it done. I remember knocking on 984 homes in my HOA because you can't send mail out to the on behalf of the HOA and asking for the vote. And that's how we got Katie Porter in the first time. But I'm back here, so I couldn't help with that. But it was interesting to me, and for older people in my generation, 50s and up, they didn't have the vision that she could even do it. And I watch it on TV, and it's the same way, and that's what I think about what has happened, is hope versus limited vision. For young people, they were thrilled here. They were out at the White House Sunday night thanking Biden and said, let's go, Kamala.
Oh, really?
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh. And see, coming from California, it's very different. But they were here. They were excited. And I think about my son and his age group. I mean, having me for a mother and his late father, he has a vision of what can be. Mm. But it was the older people like, it's going to be chaos. We can't get this done. And now they're beginning to buy in because back to the funding and the hope. So that's it. And I refer people back to all of us. Look what we did a few years ago. We can do it again.
And that's it.
As Pauline and everybody's saying, we go to work, even if we do what we did before, it will happen again. And it can happen, and it will happen, but it is hard work. But I think more people will buy it. It's just, that's what amazed me in it, is that the young people are like, I'm on it. And the older people are like, how could they do him like that? They didn't, as I say, they don't understand the arc of Democratic strategies. We see it on the Republican side, but we don't necessarily buy into it on the Democratic side. But now we go to work. We're going to get it done. I truly believe that.
Thank you for that, Yolanda.
We'll get
back to that, Art, because there is a formidable momentum. There's a physics property underway. But before we go and break that down even further, I want to hear what Olivia Fu's experience of her peers are about how they're, I mean, I'm certain that so many were not going to be, and they weren't going to vote at all. But so you're dealing with the pre-Sunday announcement. And now tell us what you're hearing and how you deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that I would say a lot of my peers are young people like myself, who I think consider themselves very civically engaged, who have voted since they were 18 and have been able to pay attention to the news cycles and who care a lot about what's going on with this country and would never imagine voting for Trump, but were feeling very resistant to voting for Biden. And I feel like in terms of how I'm thinking about going forward and talking to these peers, it's taking seriously those concerns and not just dismissing them. Sort of like learning from why is it that people, even though they may hate this one man, why is it that they were still resistant to voting when in the past they are those people who have been on the ground getting people out to vote, knocking on doors, and then have not felt the urge to do that or the willingness to do that for this cycle. I think, like, even before Biden's debate performance, like, there was a whole uncommitted movement in
One primary after the next.
One primary after the next.
It was predictable. I go, where's the college towns? Okay, I knew a percentage was going to be a sort of an opposition vote to the incumbent in those primaries.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. Like, it was, I think, like 20% of Democratic voters in Michigan voted uncommitted, and a lot of those were
Ann Arbor and Madison and all those. Yeah,
and a lot of them were young Black voters who Democratic Party needs to convince to win the elections in the fall. So I think, like, I kind of am thinking about, okay, like, what are their concerns? From what I hear, like, Biden's the issues with age, is he healthy enough to run? Those were concerns, but primarily people were focused on the issues. The war, the genocide in Gaza has been very primary concern for people my generation, and really felt like Biden himself was not handling that in a way that they could support. So I think that right now Vice President Harris has a moment, and I saw that she declined to preside over Netanyahu's visit to the Senate. So she has a moment right now to show that she's listening. Young people aren't just opposed to older leaders because of their age. It's because they feel like they aren't invested in young people's issues, that they aren't listening to them. So I think that trying to show how we are being listened to, and wanting to see that, would be how I'm thinking of talking to my peers.
Somebody's commenting with Olivia there. Was that you, Polly, or Yolanda?
It was Yolanda. I said I agree, because for President Biden, my concern always was, I noticed in the campaign, he wasn't talking about Gaza anymore. And I get to see a lot of these people here, Secretary Blinken and stuff. And also, too, as you said, the younger generation, rightfully so, homelessness. Or I thought about, I happened to be out the country at the time, when the police were sent on UCLA campus at 2 or 3 in the morning, if I remember correctly. And I thought, if I had a child in there and they're put out of college and they can't go back, whether I've been paying tuition or scholarship or not, those are voters who will either do, as just previously stated, not vote as an act of consciousness, or vote for another party, Green Party, which is another nullification vote, whether we like it or not. And that was my concern, because across the nation, there were students who stood up and said, no, and faculty, no more of this. And what were we offering them as a reason to engage in this process? And I think we now have open ears and hearts to possibilities again. Now we'll see in the days ahead how that evolves from the party. But certainly on the other side of the house, it just doesn't exist. So that was my concern, those two issues. So thank you for bringing those up.
Jane?
Well, I thought I'd already talked enough.
That's fine. I just, because you can respond to this too. We still have some time.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I do think that the youth vote is what's going to save us, and I think that it's absolutely accurate that we have to listen, not preach at young people. We need to make sure that they understand that they're being heard, and that we're taking their concerns seriously. And so what I love about things like canvassing is that often the candidate, like a congressional candidate, will be there. And so I always take the young person over to talk to the congressional candidate so that they can hear firsthand from the young person what the concerns are. So I think that it's a little more difficult when we're talking about a presidential candidate, but I do think the importance of making sure that young people are able to speak directly to important people within the Democratic Party and candidates like for Congress and Senate and stuff, so that they know they're acknowledged, right? They exist, and they get the FaceTime, and then a lot of the congressional candidates will then reach out and respond to the youth that they've spoken to, and bring them in to be advisors or to have further conversations.
For those listeners who've just joined us, my guests are Polly Mary, retired higher education administrator, Yolanda Robinson, retired professional and a veteran of electoral politics, as you're hearing. Jane Wishon is the co-chair of the Organizational Development and Chartering Committee at the Los Angeles County Democratic Party and co-chair of the California Democratic Credentials Committee. And Olivia Fu, a Tom Ford Philanthropy Fellow at North Star Fund and a previous election activist, voters registration activist in South Orange County High Schools. So we're talking about this unprecedented moment because it is. So let's just chew on it a little bit more, consider, ruminate. What we know, the knives are coming out, but there's a couple of things that might be a sort of way of bringing the power out of some of the countering is that there's I think the momentum is still very new in garnering support, establishing support for Vice President, now presidential nominee Kamala Harris. There's that. And then the other power play still that is in play right now is that the GOP does not know what vice presidential candidate they're running against. So I'm just imagining that would be announced at the absolute last possible moment in order to get the formalities lined up for the nomination to be legal in the Democratic Party. But so there's that unknown. And then we can see how, and comment on any of these three factors. But yesterday, so Kamala Harris must have been able to draft this rally address a long time ago where she has just, all she has to do is run by her resume and in her prosecutorial work, and that she can peg every accomplishment of hers in as a prosecutor and put in the other column the offenses for which the former president was indicted or convicted. I mean, the symmetry there is unprecedented. That's never happened either. So all four of you sort of jump on any of those factors that are really interesting right now.
Well, yesterday, that comment about her role here in California as attorney general or whatever her job was, and to that her position there, and then confronting Trump if he would even come up for a debate, which is not likely. I find that really possibly very amusing to see her trample all over him. This is my fantasy of a debate between the two of them. I bet he would not even dare to debate her because she would not stand for it. Remember how she responded to Biden in the one debate where she said it was because of you that I had to, that I had to ride the bus or something. I forget exactly what that was. So she would be well prepared to debate him. I'm just hoping that Trump will say, yes, I will. But I think he's chicken.
Won't.
I don't think he would.
He's already
said
he won't.
I don't think he will.
He said it a couple times.
He's already announced he won't. For me, hi, Shalonda, is the fascinating part because I have friends in California years ago who said I'd never vote for her for attorney general because of, you know, her position as attorney general against, you know, locking people up and not excusing them. But the laws were different at that time. And now it's being used as a strength because how, whether it's independents or moderates view criminal justice. So that's moved from a negative, from a con to a pro now. And so, and this is just me in my opinion. I see like back to that arc of how times change and how it shifts through so that makes it difficult with J.D. Vance had already said, she's VP, I won't debate with her. And now we have two no's because as presidential candidate, Trump has announced, I won't do it. And they are scrambling because they cannot take this to the Supreme Court. And the vice president, her vice president choice will be, it's going to be announced before August the 7th. That's the deadline. So that's within the rules, as we've all talked about. And And more important, equally important, the person that's doing all the vetting for the VP is former Attorney General Eric Holder, who did the vetting for former President Barack Obama. So who's to know? It's just comforting, but we have lots of work to do. But we're going to get it done.
Jane, and then Olivia.
All of us. I'm talking to the ladies on here.
I'm so excited about doing this now. I wasn't excited about Biden and going out and knocking on doors, but I'm taken back to when Obama ran and we held meetings here in my living room and made phone calls. I remember saying to some woman calling her back east, I said, "You have to vote for Obama." And she says, "Well, I'm not so sure." I said, "You want to be able to say you voted for the first black president." She says, "Oh, okay, so I am all juiced up now to get on the phone." I wasn't thinking about that for Biden, but I certainly will be on somebody's phones to be calling people and telling them to get out there and vote for her.
Thank you.
Really thrilling.
Jane, and then Olivia.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I try to take my my direction from the candidate and the campaign. And the Lincoln Project also has put out a really strong ad for Kamala already. And people have resurfaced her 2020 ad where she talks about being a prosecutor and prosecuting, you know, sex offenders, and Donald Trump is one, those kinds of things. So look for that on social media. It's really kind of amazing to see that, because literally you could take Mike Pence out of that video and you could play it now. Just put J.D. Vance right in that one spot in the video. It's amazing. It's exactly the messaging that I think will help us at this time. And of course, none of us have really mentioned Trump's Project 2025, but, you know, I think this is the time for a woman to lead us against a clearly misogynistic plan. And Project 2025 isn't just, you know, a pipe dream. It's a detailed plan of how to accomplish things like defunding the FBI, defunding the Department of Education, defunding the EPA, all these things that all the accomplishments of and Obamacare, all the accomplishments of Obama and Biden, and even previous ones like the EPA, you know, Environmental Protection. They want to roll back all of that, and there's a plan of how to do that. And that's the really scary part. And as much as I'm thrilled to run for Kamala, I'm also equally dedicated to running against Project 2025.
Jane, I don't mean to step on your toes, but I want to advance the idea. It's not a plan. It's a manual. 933 pages. And we covered that exclusively last week with a Democratic activist that is out of Nashville, because Tennessee's experiencing Project 2024, right, as they move about the state. So those are things I just want to respond to. But thank you. And so, Olivia, your response.
Yeah, I think since you asked this question, I've been thinking about Vice President Harris is one of her more iconic viral quotes right now, which is the one where she talks about what could be unburdened by what has been. And I sort of feel like that's how I'm feeling about this moment, that there's so much potential. And then she can selectively unburden herself from some of the more unpopular moments and points and positions of the last administration. I think that there are voters who know that they don't like Trump but are tired of this lesser of two evils narrative that they have been presented with, and or picking the better of two options that you're unhappy with. This is an opportunity to put forth and have a candidate that people are excited about, like I think everyone on this call has mentioned. So I think I saw that they have tentatively said that they're going to lean really hard into supporting abortion rights and upholding rule of law as kind of two main points of this campaign. And I think we saw how successful in this last like year or two abortion was on the ballot on kind of constitutional referendums and even southern states. So I feel like I'm excited to see the campaign lead around abortion and lead around rule of law, which will hopefully include international rule of law and Gaza as ways to show that they're listening to people who have been hesitant thus far in the election.
Well, I wish we had more time. I want to thank everybody for, and it was not prepared on what much notice. Some people got the call for me after dinner time. Thank you, Olivia. And so I want to thank all of you. And I, there were some nuggets in there. Yolanda, being raised in Memphis, that was the like one of the richest sorts of pieces that I hadn't seen that I was going to get out today in the interview. So all of this has been really, really incredible. Thank you all. Polly Mary, retired higher ed administrator. Yolanda, as you heard, a seasoned veteran of election politics. Jane Wishon, on the L.A. County Democratic Party and many clubs, and a co-chair of the California Democratic Credentials Committee, and Olivia Fu at the North Star Fund. Thank you all for being today on Ask a Leader.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Enjoy
it. Thank you. Well, that's my wrap. Next week, my guests will include Representative Asa from the J.C. Cares USA and South Coast Rep actor Armando Gutierrez, who will be performing the summer's production of the indie folk musical The Old Man and the Old Moon at the Mission San Juan Capistrano, now through July 11th, the final summer for the Outside SCR at the Mission. Talk with you next week. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Now let's go protect our democracy. I got a job, baby. I got work to do. I got work to do.